Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is Chol Majok. He's the Democratic candidate for Syracuse's 3rd District City Council seat. And barring a bizarre development, he will be the first refugee elected to public office in Syracuse. There is another candidate still in the race, Ahmad Rahim, who's also a refugee, and he will appear on the Independence and Working Families party lines. But Rahim is not running an active campaign at this point, and he's thrown his support to Mr. Majok. Now, there is yet a third refugee appearing on the ballot in Syracuse for a different race. Jai Subedi is running for Syracuse's 1st District City Council seat on the Working Families party line. But at least at this point, incumbent Councillor Joe Carney is slightly favored to win that race. We'll not see until Election Day, of course. I should also note that I've worked with Mr. Majok in the past, serving as a field advisor for his research in graduate school. But, Chol, first of all, congratulations on your Democratic primary victory, and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a thrill to have you here. And I've heard you tell this before, but I want to start for our listeners with a brief version of your experience being displaced from your home and your home country, your journey to find safety, and how you actually arrived here in Syracuse. Again, I know it's a very long story, but at least for our listeners, if you could just give them a brief taste of that experience.
So a story of lost boys is a story of young children that left their home because of war and went to neighboring countries to seek shelter and some sense of safety and opportunities. We all left our villages at a young age to neighboring countries, leaving our parents behind.
Because you were afraid for your lives.
We were all afraid.
And being forced into military service.
Exactly,
is that right?
Yeah. Exactly. Now, when you listen to the story of lost boys, there's thousands and thousands of us all coming from all different directions. For one, I'm from the Lost Boys of Nottingham. There's a book about that as well. Lost Boys of Nottingham. We were a young group of boys that were staying together. But the takeaway to our story and to understand it deeply is that we were all we ran away from our homes and to neighboring areas to seek shelter, leaving our parents behind. So majority of us didn't have parents. Although in some sense, when parents realized that we left, they tried their best to follow us, in which some of the parents eventually catch up with us, but not it was a fraction of them. I, on the other hand, to be specific, my father was one of the first soldiers in the first South Sudanese Liberation Army infantry. So he wasn't much at home with us, as any other soldier that would be in front line and serving their country. Mm-hmm. So he although we did have interaction, it wasn't much. But in a nutshell, that's our story. We can go into details in another time, but that's overall, that's the story of those boys.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Go forward a little bit in the story. I wanted to know, when you first arrived in this country, what was the thing that most surprised you when you first started living here?
Well, there is something that, you know, that continue to attract many immigrants across the world, and that is the welcoming sense of the people in this community, how they embrace people. You know, I mean, we as a community and as a country, we have our issues, but we cannot forget and ignore the fact that it is a welcoming place. As you know, other things, you know, make it seem like it's not. But you know, that's what attracts a lot of us, you know, to come 10,000 miles away to come here. You know, it's a very welcoming community and society.
I want to come back to an aspect of that a little bit later, but let me stick with your life story here and now move it up to the present. And that's, you have past political experience. You, once you started working in the United States, you had past political experience working for Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, and then you worked for State Senator Dave Valesky. So you're not a political novice here, but I'm wondering, how did you decide to actually run for office in your own right? How did you make that decision to throw your hat in the ring?
Well, it's a passion of mine. I remember, and you know, you have probably read it in the paper that that I have had this dream and passion for a very long time. I was inspired by my father as he was fighting for the freedom of South Sudanese people. So I have had that, just didn't have the opportunity to really cultivate it and have it be seen. So when I came here, I talked to my high school guidance counselor, and the first thing when I was in 10th grade, she asked me, "Joel, you are 2 years away from going to college, and you're 2 years away from finishing high school. Is college in your future?" I said, "Absolutely." She said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "I want to be an elected official."
Okay.
And she said, "Okay." And I said, "How do I get there?" She said, "Well, you can study so many things, but, you know, political science is one of them." I said, I'll study political science. And that's how the conversation started. So every moment since then, every move has been intentionally for me to try to be there. And I'm just very, very fortunate and thankful to the people of this community and this country to really give me the opportunity.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Chol Majok, the Democratic nominee for city councilor in Syracuse's 3rd council district. So you'll be, if not the first refugee, at least one of two first refugees to hold public office in Syracuse, and your election is pretty secure at this point. Are there any issues here in Syracuse that are related to policies about refugee resettlement or immigration more generally that you want to work on as city councilor? Are there things that you already have in your head, these are things I want to try to do?
Well, I, you know, like any other freshman, there's a lot that each person want to accomplish. And I do have a lot. I do have a lot. And although I'm very realistic that, you know, once you get into office, it's not a, you can't do things alone. It involves other people, so I'm conscious of that. I have things like police community relation that I really, really want to get involved with. I think as law enforcement people have good intentions to serve our community, sometimes there are things that, you know, create tensions within that, you know, frame where they are trying to do their best to do their job. Yet at the same time, people who are receiving the services, which are the community people, may understand it differently. And I think that's where leadership come in. People like ourselves who are trusted with that. With leadership to try to bring those forces together, the community and the law enforcement. And I'm very interested in that, to be actively engaging the community with law enforcement, creating that, making sure that people that serve our neighborhoods look like the people that live in the neighborhood. Mm. And if we can find people like that to make sure that the people that are serving the community are culturally competent in providing those services. And I think there's a lot of work to be done in that area. And then the second part is I want to work hard on housing. I grew up on Cannon Street when I came as a refugee. It breaks my heart every day to go back to where I was, where I first came as a refugee, to see that it's deteriorating day by day. And I'm not coming in with promises, but I'm going to do my best to make sure that our children, our youth, our elders, the vulnerable population in our district is understood, is served better. So housing, bringing people that can help in that area and creating a conversation around that and just doing a lot of listening, because there's a lot, Dr. Rhea, there's a lot of answers out there. It's just that as leaders, we have to learn to listen.
And I'm curious whether you have particular views on the city of Syracuse being what is often called a sanctuary city when it comes to immigration and meaning. And there's controversy and conflict over what that term actually means, but meaning, at least here for our purposes, that it's a city that will limit its cooperation with the federal government in pursuing immigration violations. What's your view on that?
You know, I always go back to why I came to this country, and that this country is a place that welcomes those that are seeking second chances in life. And while we are trying to protect the interests of those who live here, we cannot forget that. We cannot forget the fact that as a country that is fortunate, we have to maintain those values that continue to attract the best from outside to here. At the same time, just like anybody, you have to protect your house. You got to protect your house, and you got to do it in a way that is comprehensive, in a way that it is helpful, and it's not hurting anybody. And when you look at sanctuary cities, for me, my understanding of that, and you define it very well, my understanding of that is that we, whoever have struggled enough to make it to our space, let's give them hospitality. Let's not treat them like they are less than a human being. And I think, you know, I'm very supportive of sanctuary cities policy, very supportive of that, because I was once in those shoes, and I understand what it feels like to seek second opportunity and not to have it. So, yeah.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Chol Majok. He's in line to become the first refugee to win public office in the city of Syracuse, and he's running for the city council. Chol, there's something that you mentioned when you were discussing what your priorities would be, and you were talking in particular about relations between the police and the community, and it got me thinking. It's a little more personal, but I do want to ask it. You're in this country, quite literally in this phrase, as an African American. But I'm getting the sense in the way that you talked about that your identity, your self-identity, is perhaps becoming a mix now of a refugee from Africa and Sudan, but also as a person of color in the United States. I mean, you've gone from in a sense, racially or ethnically, you know, one kind of status in Africa to a different kind of status in the United States. How's that? I don't know if that question makes sense, but how's that playing out for you? Do you see yourself kind of as a part of a different group than you did before? Maybe that's the way to ask the question.
You know, I would say to people that once you are a refugee, you will always be a refugee. And my saying in that is this. When I came to this country, it was a new learning experience. It was like having to learn all over a different culture. Now, I have been here for 17 years. It's going to be 18 on the 21st of this month. Saying that is, when I go back to my country, the country of birth, South Sudan today, I will have to learn all over again, because I have been away close to 30 years. As many lost boys who are in my shoes have not went back yet. Mm-hmm. 30 years, that a lot have changed in that. You can imagine from 2001 to today, we didn't have iPhone, but look, iPhone is everything now in terms of technology. But coming back to that, I always say whether I was born in Africa and immigrated here as a refugee, you know, people, regardless of their background, want the same thing. They want the safety of their children, the safety of their own lives. They want peace. And for me, as I would refer to myself as African American, of course, but I prefer to be black, because okay. Everywhere black is much more universal than that. I would say also in this country there is this thing where the descendant of Africans, which are today called the African American, have been here for over 400 years. Yet they are still referred to as African American. When are they going to be American? Hmm. To me, that's still saying that they don't belong here. And to me, it's troubling. I'm okay to be called African American because I just came yesterday. What about somebody that have known this place for generations, and they're still referred to as African American? I think there is a correction to be made there to the conventional language. But for me, I continue to experience, because of who I as a refugee, there's no distinction between me and any other black people. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm same black person. So anything that they receive, I got it. But there's a slight maybe difference there, because I have a different culture. I came from a different culture, and I'm trying to embrace both of these. Maybe that may be the distinction, and the mm-hmm. fact that once I'm a refugee, and I always remain a refugee. You know, you can't really, really fit in completely here, and you can't really fit in completely in your country, because you have two beautiful cultures that you continue to embrace. You know.
So I'm gonna make a jarring transition now. Okay. I want to talk about present day city politics in Syracuse. First of all, what are your impressions of Syracuse's Mayor Ben Walsh and his leadership? How would you evaluate that?
Well, for me, I was fortunate to have worked with Ben Walsh under Mayor Miner's administration. Although we did not work in the same department, we interact quite a bit, because when I was under Mayor Miner, I was a scheduler coming in, and that gave me quite a bit of interaction with Ben Walsh as he was heading the business sector of the city, business department. I continue to like Ben Walsh. I think he's a terrific human being, and I can't wait to work with him.
Do you think it'll be a problem, though, that he did endorse one of your opponents in the race, I believe, Ahmad Rahim? Any concerns about that at all going forward?
Not at all, because I do believe that people have to make decisions, and just because it didn't go in my favor does not mean that we should be jeopardizing any opportunities to serve our constituents. So, I'm coming in with a clean, you know, plate, and we'll see what we can put in.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Syracuse City Council candidate Chol Majak. What about the other members of the council that you'll be working with? Have you had conversations with them? How do you anticipate that working relationship to go? Because there has been some conflict in the council from time to time over recent years, and some of it has been somewhat stark.
Well, I have one goal, Dr. Rear, one goal, and that is to make sure that my constituents are serviced. You know, they receive what they need, and that's why I'm there. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that they get that. Of course, it's a political environment, and it's people are going to rub elbows because they are going to disagree. But I'm going to always remember that I'm there to serve my constituent. Although I didn't, I'm fortunate to have known many of the counselors before I ran for the office. I have working relationship with a lot of them, and I don't think that if we do not bring anything personal into this endeavor, I don't think that there would be any issues. But I'm ready to do whatever it takes to serve as my constituents.
Now, you haven't even been elected to city council yet.
Yes.
But I'm going to do what all political pundits do and ask questions about your future plans, because you made it clear that getting to elected office was something you wanted to do since you were a kid. So, and going back to when you lived in Africa. So do you have thoughts about places you'd like to go? I mean, is this a first step towards something in the future, or are you just going to take this thing right now?
See, I'm a very methodological person, and you know, having this opportunity, and you're right, I got to pass the November 1st. But I am so excited. I am so excited about this opportunity to serve people of the 3rd District. And I have not wrapped my head around what's next. I just want to finish, you know, do the best job as I could possibly do in the 3rd District. And then, you know, I don't know. I'm just, the focus is this seat. I want to get in there. I want to do the best I can. And yes, and I'm a politically motivated person. I love politics. I love helping people. And whatever that means, I don't know at the moment. All I know is I got a seat to win in November.
So I want to shift it back to sort of bigger issues again and tap some of your experiences coming here as a refugee, the things that you've learned and that you reflect on. Is there one thing that really stands out to you about Americans that they don't understand about refugees, particularly these days? I mean, what is there one thing that stands out that most Americans just don't fully understand?
I don't think I would say that they fully don't understand, but you know, sometimes they appear to be, you know, not a clear cut. But they have an idea, mm-hmm. and that is refugees are just people like you. They are just regular human beings like you. They have dreams. They have desires. They feel pain just like you. They want the same thing that you want for your children. They want the same safety in housing, you know, clean water, clean clothing, protection, you know. And I don't think that is sometimes understood correctly. But they are just same people like yourself. You know, if you, whatever you do for your children, your family members, yourself, if it feels that it's necessary, they desire and want that as well. And I don't think that's usually the case. As you have seen now in, you know, organization like Interfaith and other mm-hmm. resettlement agencies are you know, fighting to make sure that those refugees and, you know, refugees get chances, get given a second chance, and mm-hmm. it's not happening at the moment, or at least in the way that it should be.
Yeah, and on that point, you know, we have to talk about this at some point. We just got a couple minutes left. Given your experiences, are you troubled by this presidential administration, in particular, the rhetoric of this president when it comes to this issue of refugees and immigration?
I am, because as I said in the beginning, that the rhetoric that's going on today is not the American people and the America and the United States that attract us 10,000 miles away. If this what it was, some that had a choice to come here may have not joined this place. You know, this is not the country that attracted us. It's not going the way it's. And this is not to say that, you know, there's not many Americans that still cherish that welcoming and hospitable America. That is not to say that. There's plenty of people that still believe in those values that has brought this country to where it is. This country is stronger because we continue to show mercy. We continue to nourish those that need to be nourished. And return for us, to decide to be anti that, you know, that ideology is disappointing.
Maybe you just gave the answer to this last question. We've only got about a minute or even less left. But if there was one thing in particular that you could say to Donald Trump, if you had the opportunity to be in the Oval Office with him alone, what would it be?
Continue to show mercy.
Well, that's a good place to end. That was Chol Majok. The election for Syracuse City Council is Tuesday, November 5th. And Chol, I need to stay away from editorial comments, but I want to say, given what I know of you as a person, I am personally delighted that you've got this opportunity. And also, thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
I appreciate you very much for having me here.
You've been listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Associate producers include Sarah Forland and Zane Aga. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit us online at wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations or download the show as a podcast from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.